Part 3. No Healing Without Understanding. Chapter 9. Getting Answers. After the Toby Jones Retirement Community hired me in 1987 as a geriatric social worker, I looked forward to working every day. My job provided variety and challenge, two qualities that appeal to a person with ADHD. Some days I gave tours to prospective residents. Other days I would convince residents to accept personal assistance or participate in a physical therapy program. Another day I might guide a resident through the paperwork for end-of-life decisions. The slow pace of speaking with elderly residents appealed to me. I relaxed in their company and enjoyed their life stories. The job required me to walk to three separate buildings, fulfilling my need for physical activity. I had independence, deciding what to do and when, other elements that appeal to someone with ADHD. Yet my interactions with my teammates were not as smooth. Have you ever been in a situation where you believe your coworkers don't like you, but you don't understand why? That is how it was for me with Susan, the head nurse. I felt comfortable and at ease with the other nurses, but that may have been because they were more reluctant to show displeasure with me. In the nursing home section of the retirement community, I had to chart every professional interaction I had with a patient. Slow, messy writing continued to plague me, as well as the challenge of organizing my thoughts and covering the necessary information in my chart notes. Sometimes that part of the job did not interest me, so I was not thorough or timely in my charting. If it ever occurred to me that some of my work problems could be ADHD-related, I pushed those thoughts to the back of my mind. The previous administrator approved everything I did and never formally evaluated my work. After she left, Anne, the new administrator, planned to have annual evaluations of key staff members, but 5 years passed before she did so. Finally, Anne came to my office to evaluate me. My small and out-of-the-way office was perfect for a confidential meeting. Anne, a former nurse, was friendly, calm, and easy to talk with. She nestled on the cozy love seat while I sat at my desk a few feet away. "You're a mixed bag," she began. "I have difficulty evaluating your work because you do so many tasks well, but others poorly." She pointed out areas where I needed to improve. Being a team player, staying with a project until finished, and completing my most important tasks first. "I can't understand why you tackle problems that aren't your responsibility," she went on. "The housekeepers told me you spent several hours rifling through Mrs. McAllister's personal papers after she died. That seemed an unusual thing for you to do." My mind whirled, trying to think of a reasonable explanation. But there was not one. "I don't know why I did that." "It was unusual behavior, inappropriate and unnecessary. Even now, after years of learning about this disorder, I cannot explain why I thought it urgently needed to be done and why I was the one to do it. I can't give a label to this behavior and never saw it described in the literature. Doing something that seemed critical at the time and later realized it should not have been done at all." Anne continued, "You had a wonderful idea to make a photographic display of the early life in this retirement community, but you didn't ask for permission before you spent time and money on it. You just jumped in without thinking who would hang the photos and where." What could I say? She was pleasantly confronting me with my unacceptable behaviors. I sat there silent and mortified and struggled to maintain my composure. Anne's grandson was diagnosed with ADHD, so she was familiar with it. She knew my son Bruce was diagnosed 3 years before, in 1989, at age 13, and sometimes we shared information. Each of the behaviors that Anne described sounded like the behaviors of someone with ADHD. After absorbing everything she said, I haltingly murmured, "I think I have attention deficit disorder." Anne's face lit up with a smile.
I think so, too.
While Anne was pleased that she helped me identify my probable ADHD, my response differed. I had trouble breathing and maintaining focus. My shoulders slumped, my stomach hollowed out, and my eyes watered. I have attention deficit disorder. Something's the matter with me. I sat paralyzed as the meaning of these words sank in. It was 1992, and I was 49 years old. Why had I been clueless for so long? Years later, when I realized how few adults ever learn about their undiagnosed ADHD, I was thankful that Anne had the knowledge and skill to encourage me to accept the possibility that I had ADHD. Without her awareness, I might never have gotten help and improved my life. For 3 years, starting when he was 13, I went with Bruce for 15-minute monthly meetings with Dr. Smith, his pediatrician, a serious middle-aged man. We sat in a drab conference room on child-sized chairs and reviewed Bruce's behavior from the preceding month. "Bruce, how are things going in your life?"
"Pretty good, I guess. I'm on the basketball team at school, but every boy is on the team because so few boys are in our class. I've started playing tennis with my dad, and I like that much better than basketball."
"How are you doing with your schoolwork?"
"We've started algebra, and I can't say I like it. It's complicated. I seem to understand when Mom goes over the problems with me, but the next day in school, I forget how to do it."
"Mom, do you have anything to report?"
"He seems happier. He cooperates in taking his medication and has better follow-through on his chores around the house. I haven't talked with his teachers to find out if they've noticed any differences. Did I tell you what finally got Steve to believe Bruce has inattentive ADHD? A teacher told us how in gym class, Bruce would be off in space, absorbed, staring at the lights in the ceiling or gazing around the room, not fully taking part in the class. After 15 minutes of checking in and checking up, it was time to go. Bruce received a prescription for another month's supply of Ritalin, a controlled substance. We were required to get a new handwritten prescription every 30 days by law. When we met next with Dr. Smith, after my evaluation by Anne, I said, "I think I have attention deficit disorder." Without hesitation, he responded, "You do." He suspected but said nothing. This angered me, although I never revealed this to him. Years later, I read a question sent by a doctor to a newspaper advice columnist. He sat behind a woman at a concert and saw a blemish on her neck he thought was cancerous. He asked the columnist if he should have told her. The columnist said yes. This made me think of Dr. Smith. If I had not told him I thought I had inattentive ADHD, would he ever have told me? Getting my diagnosis affected my life as much as it might for the woman with a cancerous growth. By not telling me his suspicions, Dr. Smith discounted the seriousness of my disability, which is neither fair nor ethical. My friend Jane told me she had seen a therapist for over a year. When she figured out inattentive ADHD might cause her problems, she told her therapist. The therapist said, "I have thought so for a long time." Susan, understandably, was furious and asked, "Why didn't you tell me a long time ago?" The therapist said, "I told someone once and it didn't go over well." If a doctor suspects cancer, he does not avoid telling the patient because the patient might get upset. The therapist's reluctance to share her suspicions means the therapist did not realize how life-threatening it is to withhold that suspicion. Not life-threatening in that ADHD causes death, but life-threatening in diminishing one's potential, limiting all one wants to achieve and accomplish. Dr. Smith observed me for fewer than 15 hours, yet he confidently diagnosed me. You may think this is strange, but once you know how ADHD presents itself, it's easy to recognize, especially if you spend more than an hour or two with someone. However, no physician today would make a diagnosis this way. We were still in the wild, wild west days of learning about ADHD. Now, a physician will do a thorough evaluation that will include checklists and reports, including input from significant others, because people with ADHD are notoriously poor self-observers. I never asked Dr. Smith what made him determine I had ADHD, so I am only guessing based on typical behaviors. I interrupted when he talked with Bruce. I spoke of things that were irrelevant to the topic at hand. I went off track a lot, got restless, and expressed exasperation when the conversation was not interesting to me, or repeated what we talked about in earlier meetings. I might have been late for appointments and been unaware of when the appointment was over. I probably had one more urgent thing to tell him even as he left the room to see his next patient. When he made my diagnosis, I sat quietly with my hands on my lap, but my mind whirled with questions. I reflected on my life. I have always felt different, and it was not a good feeling. However, since I did not know how or why I was different, I could not change myself to fit the mold. I was not a social misfit, as I had friends and participated in activities, but I rarely felt relaxed or at ease in the company of others. In junior high, a group of the most popular girls called each other every night to hash over the school day and gossip. My best friend was in this group, and while I was comfortable talking with her, I felt awkward talking on the phone with anyone else. For example, the first and only time I talked on the phone with Judy, I knew I was expected to speak with her for 1 hour or more. I ran out of topics after 10 minutes, but continued to have an awkward and strained conversation for the remaining 50 minutes before hanging up, sadly concluding, "I'm different. I don't fit in." In high school, I played on the girls' softball team. I remember standing on third base, yawning and yawning, trying to stay awake. It seemed strange to me, as I was not tired. Who yawns while playing a sport? I do, I reasoned, because I am different. Now I know I yawned from boredom and struggled to stay awake. Even as an adult, my differences were observed and questioned. When my 5-year-old son injured his finger and came to me for comfort, I responded by putting a bandage on his finger, but offered no words of comfort. He asked, "Why are you different from other moms?" When I took ballroom dance lessons years later, the same son, then a teenager, asked, "Why can't you remember the dance steps?" A neighbor once told me, "You're different." When I worked at a retirement community, a resident said, "You're different." I was keeping count. Was I sensitive to being told I was different? You bet I was. After being told and believing for many years that I was different, I finally learned why from Dr. Smith. My ADHD makes me different. I was the first adult Dr. Smith treated for ADHD, and at the time, I wrongly thought, I'm the only adult with ADHD in the United States. Dr. Smith surprised me when he said, "I'm envious of you. You get to start a whole new life." I didn't feel that way. I just discovered I had a disorder, and he was envious of me, trying to cheer me up. Nice try. Can't you do better than that? All I wanted to do was leave his office as quickly as possible to be away from the space where my self-image and my life were destroyed. I doubted Steve would be supportive. I used to joke that as a surgeon, he was completely willing to cut something out to make a person well, but he was totally against taking medication. I learned over time, and not just with Steve, that when a family member exclaims, "You don't have ADHD," they are saying they don't believe this disorder exists. They don't want you to have this disorder, or they're fearful they might have it as well. I was fortunate that Dr. Smith diagnosed my ADHD. Most physicians in 1992 did not recognize it in adults. If they were familiar with ADHD in children, they believed children outgrew it when they became adults. The 5th Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, DSM-5, the standard classification of mental disorders used by mental health professionals in the U.S., was published in 2013. It was the first time that it included modified criteria for attention deficit disorder in adults. The DSM-5 calls it attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, but when Dr. Smith diagnosed me, it was called ADD, with or without hyperactivity. I had it without hyperactivity. I now say I have inattentive ADHD. My primary symptoms are inattention, distraction, impulsivity, disorganization, and forgetfulness. After being diagnosed, medication improved my performance and relationships. The counseling I received and the reading I did taught me about inattentive ADHD behaviors. I began using techniques for managing or minimizing their disruptive influences. I was improving, but my emotions were complicated. It surprised me when, a year after my diagnosis, I blurted out, "I've been in a grieving process." I had been unaware of grieving until the words came out of my mouth. I was grieving the loss of my self-image. I thought I was a unique individual who did a few things differently from others, but this was a source of pride. Now, I learned that what made me unique was a disorder, an aberration. What I thought was special made my life more difficult and the lives of my family and friends more difficult when they interacted with me. In short, I had a disability. As I realized how others might view me, I was ashamed. I was not special. Instead, there was something wrong with me, and everyone knew it. That is why I received negative reactions over the years from family, friends, and colleagues, even strangers. It all came flooding back, my inappropriate actions, the people I offended, and the mistakes I made. I felt less than others, and this made me awkward and self-conscious. Even though my interactions and relationships improved after medication, another part of me wanted to withdraw from socializing. I grieved for the life I lost. My entire life was less than it could have been. If only someone had known of my ADHD earlier. If only someone had diagnosed and treated me as a child, so much of my life would have been easier. ADHD seemed responsible for every setback or disappointment in my life. Many adults with ADHD are angry when they look back on their lives. They have unhappy memories of being demeaned, criticized, and made to feel inadequate. They wonder why they were not treated with kindness, patience, understanding, and love. They wonder why no one figured out that there was something wrong. It would have made such a difference. I doubted the truthfulness of Dr. Smith's comment, but as time went on and my life improved, I remembered his hopeful words, and they proved true. It took me 3 years after learning about Bruce's inattentive ADHD to accept that I had the same disorder. It took me a year in treatment to overcome my grief and recognize improvements in my life. It took 4 more years to conquer most of my inattentive ADHD challenges. This time frame might sound daunting, but it should not. If you are reluctant to start your journey, accepting and managing your ADHD will make you more satisfied than you might believe possible. Myth: ADHD is not a real medical disorder. Fact: the American Psychiatric Association recognizes ADHD as a medical disorder in its DSM, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the official mental health guidebook used by psychologists and psychiatrists.